Yeah, let's do it. I'm pumped. Let's let the healing begin.
God help you if you use voiceover in your work, my friends. God help you. It's flaccid, sloppy writing.
I don't want you to be the guy in the PG-13 movie everyone's really hoping makes it happen. I want you to be like the guy in the rated R movie, you know? The guy you're not sure whether or not you like yet.
Welcome in, everybody, to the 97th episode
that's of
the Get Your Film Fix podcast. 97. Never thought we'd get here. Actually, that's true. Never thought we'd get here. So today, we're going to discuss the new Lynn Ramsey film. You heard me right. A woman director. You were never really here.
We just lost half our audience.
Yep. So we're going to discuss You Were Never Really Here, directed by Lynn Ramsey, her fourth feature film. That may or may not lead into a bit of a discussion on her, much to Chapin's chagrin. We're going to talk a little bit about movies that follow common storylines or have different takes on the same storyline, and then we're going to wrap everything up with our top five characters you wouldn't want knocking at your door.
I'm going to ask you some questions. How many are there?
One guy inside the front door, second guy on the top floor.
After the tone, please leave a message.
It's done.
A man called. He wants to see you right away.
State Senator Albert Vato. His teenage daughter's missing.
What's the lead?
He got an anonymous text with an address.
I've heard of these places. They said you were brutal.
I can be.
I want you to hurt them.
Okay, so guys, I think with You Were Never Really Here, there's probably two kind of primary things that we will end up discussing, one being Ramsey's telling of the story, and then the other being the character she creates of Joe, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and I kind of want to focus on that first, mostly because of something that I noticed and picked up on, and I don't know if you did or even if it was intentional, but did either of you guys see the post? You guys saw the poster for this movie?
Yes.
I'm looking at it, yeah.
Okay, so when I first looked at it, and even at a closer glance, it looks like Joe, Joaquin Phoenix, is wearing a cape. And I think it's, you know, obviously just kind of the way that the image is designed. He's not really wearing a cape, and perhaps it's a coincidence that we're having this podcast, and I'm asking this question on the day that the new Avengers film comes out, but do you guys feel like Joe is some type of a version of a superhero? Perhaps not one with powers, but you mm-hmm. know what I mean.
I didn't get that sense. But the problem I had with this movie was I didn't get a sense of much. I just like I ended up watching. We need to talk about Kevin and Marvin. Such a hard word to say. Collar, with Samantha Morton. So, like, it's hard for me to talk about this movie without relating to the others, because she's very thematic, and she, you see a lot of the same things throughout her other movies, and to varying degrees of success. But it was really hard for me to get a grasp of what ultimately she was trying to say with this movie. Like, I feel like... with all her movies, there's just this sense of tragedy from the beginning. And I feel like it needs to be a little bit more underscored with something more tangible than artistic aesthetic, which she has in spades. And I really like how her films look and move and are edited. But ultimately, the artistic sensibility that she gives in this movie and in others, and I like this one more than definitely We Need to Talk About Kevin, it's so obvious that it's trying to, in some way, allude to some deeper truth or something that you can grasp onto as an audience member, that ultimately I don't know if it exists. At least it wasn't apparent to me. I mean, did you guys feel like you took some? I really desperately wanted to take something out from this movie, but did you guys feel like you could grasp onto something, or was it more an exercise in filmmaking?
What do you think, Tapin?
I grasped onto Joaquin Phoenix's character quite a bit but as a whole, Jeremy, I felt sort of the same way you did. I was with the movie for the first half. I think I was willing to put up with, I think, the things you're identifying, or at least alluding to, in that, you know, she's not really spelling it out for you. It reminded me a little bit of my experience with Annihilation. But I did, the one thing I did kind of, that did kind of get me was Joaquin Phoenix's character, Joe. But yeah, I mean,
I think that has a lot to do with Joaquin Phoenix.
I do too. I think he's a fascinating actor. I mean, I just kind of felt like he was like let loose on this movie, you know, like uncaged in a weird way. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we want to keep getting in depth in this or not, but I found her style, and I found it hard to, exactly what you said, Jeremy, that it didn't grab me. I felt it was disjointed. And
were either of you guys able to check out any of her other movies?
Am
I the only one?
I've seen We Need to Talk About Kevin, or at least part of it. I don't remember a lot of it, but that's the only one I've seen of hers.
Yeah, I watched both of them, but to go back to the reason I sort of wanted to kind of ask this question, and I'm glad that you brought this, you know, this up about how she kind of gives you almost this montage-like character development of Joe. I actually really liked how she did that in this movie, because I thought it, you know, gave you enough to kind of piece some things together, but sort of leave some up to your imagination. But then it also kept the mystery of this character alive. Like and I think she does this type of thing a lot, and she does it to a lesser extent in We Need to Talk About Kevin, which I also really liked. But that was a character that didn't need to be as much of a mystery. If anything, you know, that was somebody that maybe we wanted a little bit more of, and like try to understand why he behaved the way he did. Even though I think it was trying to suggest that, you know, there's not necessarily a reason, but you know, that kind of shrouded in mystery element of Joe, I think. And the reason I sort of was kind of captured by this is I think it extends to the poster, where they're kind of suggesting one thing: is he a hero? Is he kind of an anti-hero? Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Like, what, you know, what is it about him that we are attracted to?
It worked
for me. I liked it a lot.
I don't think she cares. I don't think the filmmaker cares. I don't think the movie cares, Lee. I think she goes out of her way to avoid those kind of questions, those kind of statements, and any sort of cliche. On purpose, to the fault of the movie, I think. And you know, I don't like cliches or whatever, but like she will do whatever she can to not show you the things that a normal movie would show you. She doesn't want to give any sort of identity, I think, to these characters that you can grasp onto. Like I wrote down, and you answered yes to this question, but to me it's no. I asked, do you feel that those flashbacks warranted enough of a connection to this character to care? And so for me, it was no.
I think the connection to the character works. I think where Ramsey struggles is in her telling of her stories. And I think it's an intentional choice on her part. I think she, and we've talked a lot, especially last week, about the less is more strategy, which I feel like I will always prefer. But she's a little bit
too far
on the side of less. And I think that plays more in the telling of her stories, but not as much with her characters. Like, I love the contemplative silent type characters that she has right. in all three of the movies I've seen. The only one I haven't seen is her first, Ratcatcher, because
yeah.
it wasn't available. But Morven Keller, Samantha Morton's character, and then Tilda Swinton, and also what's the kid's name? And we need to talk about Kevin, Ezra Miller, and then now with Joaquin Phoenix, they all are this contemplative type of character that she does a really, really good job, I think, of letting us look at and read their faces and try to understand what they're thinking, and she lingers on it and lets us think about it. And I think that works really, really well here, and I like it in all her movies.
I don't know that I agree with that. I don't know that less... I wouldn't describe her style as less is more. I would just, like, she... I think
confusing.
She, like, overwhelms you yeah. with these little yeah. inserts and... And like okay, he was like literally one shot of him in the desert in the military. Okay, I mean that's almost right. it's almost like
that's
too it's almost cheap, you know? Like it's okay. Now we know he's in the military. And I read a synopsis on Wikipedia that he was a former FBI agent. I don't know how are we supposed to know that.
Who got that information? Yeah. That's
I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with her non-linear storytelling. In especially this, and we need to talk about Kevin. But for example, in this, she never tonally changes at all between like her flashbacks, what's happening currently, and also fantasy, which really.
But she only did that once.
Bizarre.
I think that was
no.
There's the scene at the end.
The scene at the end was totally out there. I didn't get that. I think that made zero sense. I also didn't get the plot, but that's a whole other thing. There were other fantasy sequences. He sees his mother at places his mother doesn't exist, and things like that. But tonally, they never change depending on what it is, and I think that really throws you off.
Well, I think the challenge is that, and like I said, I think where I think she struggles is giving you enough for her story to flow, but I think that she does a good job with her characters. But the challenge here, especially with this one, is that they're sort of one and the same. I mean, you're really just telling the story of this character. You're 100% with him. Everything is from his perspective. So, you know, you can't necessarily have one without the other. So when I say she's not giving us quite enough for this story to work, that means she's not giving us enough to understand this character. For me, you know, one way or the other, mm-hmm. I liked it. I liked the mystery. You know, I agree the scene when he was in the desert in the army, like that didn't feel right. But like the scenes, the little flashbacks from when he was a kid, you know, the kind of through line of him trying to commit suicide, I think all were just enough for me. I liked it. I thought it was...
But what,
you know,
was that what he was trying to do?
No, I don't think he was. I think he was just trying to get himself high,
yeah,
basically.
I think
lack
he,
of
was,
oxygen.
He was like asphyxiating himself as like an escapist type of like
right.
solution.
Okay,
something.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. But he even did it as a kid, right? That was him. Yeah, so okay. But like all of that worked. Like I liked the mystery. I liked the little bits and pieces that we got. I'm glad we didn't get a whole backstory on where he came from and who he is. I wish we got a little bit more information on what he was doing, though.
I think this is a conscious decision with her, but with her character development. And you could tell me what you thought, Lee, because you saw all of these movies. But like lots of her characters make decisions that. Kind make zero sense, and she tries to throw you off the scent. Basically, she's trying to confuse you. It's like in this movie, it was the point where he gave the pill to the FBI agent that may have killed his mother. The parents and Kevin, their decisions all the time when it was sort of obvious something was terribly, terribly wrong. That made no sense. And then in Marvin Keller, it was her not telling anybody that, you know, this guy killed himself, and then making her decision to go the way she does. So there's all these sort of character decisions that really throw you off as a viewer, and you have to wrestle with it. And I know she does it on purpose, but there's no sort of binding agent that makes it work as an audience member.
So I think maybe where you and I differ on her movies is that I agree that those things are there, and that they're, you know, often a bit of a leap, or you have to, you know, accept them to be able to accept her movies. But those are not her, those elements are sort of just, you know, wheels to get you to her deeper themes, if that makes
sense.
But
I don't know. Yeah, but what are those deeper themes? That's my problem, is like I said at the beginning, I don't understand all, and it could be me. I could have missed it, especially in We Need to Talk About Kevin, which I thought was a horrible movie. I thought that just missed
the mark.
Oh, tonally and everything, completely. I mean, that kid was basically Damien from the beginning, and they never addressed it. And it was a very bizarre sort of, what kind of world are we living in where they can't, like, nail down this psychopath, really. So I really had a problem with that. But yeah, I don't know. Like, what did you find were the ultimate, like, what did, like, you were never really here. What, it doesn't have to be anything profound, and it doesn't have to be anything great, but what was she trying to do as a filmmaker ultimately?
I think she's exploring a character, and I think, you know, that's where the mystery comes in. You know, as I mentioned, like, you're not necessarily going to learn everything about her, but you're dealing with somebody who clearly has a haunting past. You know, for whatever reason, they've been driven to do this type of work, and sort of compelled to do this type of work. You know, I wouldn't suggest that he enjoys it, but he certainly feels like it's something he should be doing. And I think she's exploring that mindset in that character. And yeah, a lot of credit goes to Joaquin Phoenix. Like, he wore that on his face, and like you saw, you know, how life had beaten him down, and like where he is, and like you understand it to a certain extent because of his performance. But I think that's what she's exploring. Like, you know, why people can do this, why people lead to violence, and look, I like the political element was so cheap in this movie. And like,
what was that? I don't even remember. What was the political element?
Well, the guy running for governor.
The only thing I thought of was she was trying to make an homage to Taxi Driver with that.
Well, we can have the discussion on the Taxi Driver tie-in. I mean, I even think that this, you could argue that this is like a sequel to Taxi Driver. Like, the beginning of this movie picks up right after the you know, the bloodbath in Taxi Driver, and Joe is really just Travis Bickle. But there's definitely parallels we can draw to that movie. But like, that element, it seemed contrived and poorly developed. But again, it was more about, you know, this character of Joe and trying to understand who he is, and I liked that we didn't necessarily get an answer, and I liked that it didn't end with him being the hero. Like, he went to try to be the hero, but it didn't work out that way.
Chapin, what do you think of that character? Do you find him believable? Is not the right word, but like real to some truth in either the world he's living in or the world we're living in? Were you able to grasp some sort of truth out of that character?
I think a little, yeah. But again, I think that's more from Joaquin Phoenix's performance, not so much, like, again, right. I found her technique to be very distracting and I almost like unnecessary. Like, you get that he is a complex person. And I guess the one argument I would make against what you're saying, Lee, is that, like, I think those little blips, the flashbacks, everything she tried to do beyond the sort of the straight linear narrative that we were being told, and Joaquin's performance within it, I felt was like, that is her, and she's doing something with that, right? Like, it's there intentionally. There's intention behind it. But I found it so confusing. Like, I didn't understand what she was saying with it. And for me, it was a distraction. It was unnecessary, and sort of, it was fat on the muscle. And it was, you know, there are these moments that were so shocking, and I kind of just wanted to see, like, everything I saw about what I liked about his performance. You know, you watch him do these things. He's very careful. He's kind of removed from the world. But when he gets into like the procedure of it, and you made a good point, Lee, about it being kind of, everything is from his point of view. you watch him sort of watch, like, I thought that scene where he's watching the townhouse towards the beginning of the movie where, you know, he's been told the girl's being caught, and like you're looking at it through the rear view mirror and everything is from his perspective, and then sort of contradicting that point, when you go back, all the violence you see is from those security cameras, and you really don't see the violence, which is interesting. So I don't really know what the point of that was.
It goes to my point of her going out of the way to avoid cliches, and that's a good example of it. I like it. I mean, if you want to talk about the violence in this movie, you see basically none of it. It's all done off screen. Like, what she chooses to edit into this movie and edit out of this movie is very interesting to me, and I like that. And I think she's a really good director. Like, she knows how to manipulate the medium of film. I just have a hard time with the movie in general.
I'm glad you brought up the security camera footage, because that for me is an example of her not doing what she does well. Like, honestly, like, with the three movies of hers that I've seen, like, I really like, I, you know, I might even, you know, loves the way that she kind of puts her movies together, and kind of the subtleties of it. But that's an example of her, like, totally, like, making a different movie. Like, that scene didn't make sense in the context of everything she was doing. And I'm not saying that we have to watch him go through the whole house and hit everybody with the hammer. But, you know, what I think would have been appropriate is maybe he cuts to, you know, him upstairs after everything's done, and then you just watch him leaving the way we do anyway, and he walks past all the things that he's done, and we see it then. That would have been just as effective without the security camera footage. And I think that's appropriate or appropriate within the confines of how she's directing the movie, which I love. Like, I love that style. I love kind of her, you know, her subtleties. And yeah, I said this last week.
What she decides to put in and what she doesn't.
Like, right. Yeah, and I said this last week. Like, I'm becoming more and more enamored by the, you know, the revealing less information types of movies. And it's interesting because we talked about that with A Quiet Place. We also talked about it with Annihilation, which, you know, probably didn't give us enough, but, like, you know, Annihilation wasn't set in reality, so there needed to be some exposition. Here, there doesn't. Here, you're just creating a
character. I don't think that was the problem with this movie. I definitely did not have a problem of her not... my problem was getting to some sort of resolution or conclusion or truth to this movie that I just felt wasn't there.
An emotional foundation.
Any foundation, whether it's emotional, a plot, a character, just something to grasp onto as an audience member in the end. And I don't think it was there. It had nothing to do with what she, you know, left out or left in. I think, I think she's, like, has a great eye. The way she can film different scenes, I was just thinking about the birth scene, for example. There's one shot in We Need to Talk About Kevin where she's giving birth, and the way that she decides to frame it with this mirror, like, you could have just, like, there's a million times in her movies you think, you could just film it like everybody else films it, but she really picks and chooses her frames, and I think she's really good at it. I just think she misses the mark. She's so concentrating on those artistic sensibilities and I don't know, whatever, filmmaking qualities that she forgets or misses or something doesn't get across with the entirety of the movie.
I'm sort of reminded of the, we talked on a couple of podcasts ago, I brought up Terrence Malick and his newer movies. And mm-hmm. you, I think, Jeremy, you brought this up when you guys were talking about the Tree of Life, but there are such, like, most of his shots are so evocative. And they're so emotional when they are sort of edited together correctly. But I would say, like, what he's been doing wrong is lately is that, like, he never gives you, he, like, deconstructs everything so much, and that he never gives you enough time or emotional bandwidth to really, like, feel something. And I think that's kind of what she does, but on a more macro level here, like kind of
macro is a good
scene
word
to scene. Yeah. Like that, that moment, like I was thinking about that moment he has with the FBI agent or the, whoever that guy is, the guy he shoots who he gives the pill to.
Right.
Like,
so that scene was totally lost on me, by the way. I don't know if it was the sound quality in the theater that I had, but I didn't understand their conversation or anything.
No, I didn't understand why. That goes back to my point of all these characters making decisions that you don't really understand. Like, there was no rationale to it, so you had to kind of sit with it as an audience member and be like, okay, I guess he's doing this now. He's deciding that he's all of a sudden empathetic and to a guy that may or may not have just murdered his mother, and we're just going to sit there and watch these two have a hand-holding session for I don't know why. Not that I need him to just bash his head in, but I need some reason and to as to why characters make decisions.
Well, I think that, I mean, that moment did resonate for me. I mean, I just like this idea that this guy is giving everything up. He's probably a hired hand, and he knows he's going to die. He's dying painfully. He takes some, I assume what he gave him was a painkiller, which is what he takes throughout the movie. Right. And, he's feeling some, you know, the guy is, it's just a job for this guy. He's dying. He gives up the information and then they've got this kind of moment. These like two strangers in this strange,
two former FBI agents.
Yeah, evidently, you know, having this kind of last connection. And
they used to be partners, actually. That's the subtext.
Right.
That's how they knew each other.
Sexual.
But
not like that.
But yeah, like this, that's this perfect example for me because it did resonate in a way, but it could have been so much more. And like, I think that again, we are, you know, trying to give her as much credit or as much, you know, try to go along with what she's doing in the movie as much as possible. You don't want to deconstruct and criticize things so kind of exactingly. But like,
of course, but you want something to hold on to as an audience.
Yeah. Like you leave the movie feeling empty and I feel low on, I don't feel like,
no, I think empty is a good word. Yeah. You like, if you went to a buffet and you just went through the line, but somehow you're not full.
Exactly. And so, and to me, I have to look at those things that kind of kept me like this is one of those movies where you want more from it, but in a way that isn't satisfying, right? Like it didn't satisfy you enough, and so you
agree.
Want these moments to be more, and then so that forces you to look at the things that kept it from being that for you, and her style just got in the way for me, and I could never understand. So after, you know, I'm trying to respect that, yes, she's doing this. She's not letting me connect to these things that I'd like to connect with for a reason. I understand that. She's not letting me see the violence. Okay, I understand that. But I don't know. But I don't get what she's telling me with the stuff she's doing instead of that. You know, that is hard for me and why you kind of leave empty.
I mean, I don't disagree with what you guys are saying. I just responded to it differently. And I think it's challenging because, you know, I think, you know, to make a movie where you're expecting your audience to leave thinking about it and trying to answer the questions on their own, you know, without giving them enough to really get a yes or no answer. I mean, the most like obvious example of this is the spinning top in Inception, right? Like, we don't ever actually know for sure whether or not it's going to fall down or not. We have to decide that on our own. And, you know, so she's making an entire movie where she's kind of leaving us with questions like that about this character. And for me, like, I like that. Like, I like kind of leaving not knowing the answer. And
I do too, but not knowing the answer and not being able to take anything away from what you just watched, like Chapin said, you feel empty.
Well, yeah, and then that's true. And I think maybe that comes all the way back to what I was saying before about, you know, not giving enough in the way of her story or her plot to, you know, tell us, I guess, the reasons or the whys of why Joe is doing what he's doing.
Well, I don't know about you.
Or not even so much that. Not even so much that, but it's more in, like, what is he doing? Like I said before, like, you know, what is, you know, who are all these people that, you know, are doing this? Like, you know, what is their connection with, you know, with him? And I think maybe those questions are a little bit more frustrating to not have answers to.
Yeah, I mean, she shows you a little bit about the components of what he does, the mechanics of what he does, his secretiveness. And the way he's insulated himself from that. And I realize that comes back later, but you know, we don't really understand like how he got where he is, which I think, you know, ostensibly isn't important, but if you look at it a little bit closer, it would shed some light on like who he is as a character, you know, more so than the cutaways to his childhood. Like, how did he get into this line of work? Why has he chosen to, you know, recover sex traded young girls? Like, that's kind of a specific profession.
So does,
you know?
So that's what the plot line says, but is that all he does, or was his first job that too? So
we don't know. I mean, based on the movie, we don't know.
Right. That's what I thought. I wasn't sure if I missed the piece I got to the movie theater and the theater I went to didn't show trailers at the start time. So I missed 30 seconds or 5 minutes. I wasn't sure. But I got to him, like he was leaving the hotel room or something.
No, that's the beginning.
Yeah, okay, I mean, he flushes some bloody stuff down the toilet or something.
All close-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, he could have just, you know, killed somebody. Like, I don't know that that's his profession to just rescue, you know, underage girls.
No, I don't think, I didn't assume it was.
I assume
he's a hitman.
That's what the plot line says. It says, like, you know, Joe recovers, you know, young girls from, you know, being, you know, sexually abused, and then one job gets out of hand or something. Anyway,
but I think like the non-linear storytelling hurt this movie in a lot of ways. Like, having just watched Morvern Caller, it's a linear story. I can't say that name.
Morvern Caller. It's not. Yeah. It's not hard.
It's you shouldn't put an R and a V next to each other.
Morvern Caller.
You have to get from that R to that V right away. Oh, fuck that. But anyhow.
That's the only. It's actually Jeremy's favorite movie ever, but he won't ever watch it again because he can't pronounce it.
Well, I was trying to find. I forgot the name of it, and so I was trying to find it on Amazon.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's going to be a tough one to find if you.
Yeah,
you're not
going to
stumble across
Morvern Caller. And then Siri's like, what? Didn't get it. But that has a very linear story. And I think that really helps connect you to that character, because you know what happened at the beginning. You know what situation she's in. And you watch to see where she's going. And I think the non-linear of You Were Never Really Here or We Need to Talk About Kevin hurt both those stories, because they have these flashbacks that don't really allow you to connect with those characters.
But you know, You Were Never Really Here was not really a non-linear story. It just had the, you know, quick flashbacks. Kevin was definitely non-linear, but
so
but that was their backstory.
I want to hear, because you guys seem to have really different opinions on that, because you guys want to take like 5 minutes and chat about that movie.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I think I really liked it. I mean, for the same reasons that I connected to You Were Never Really Here, as I just think that, you know, so much is said, you know, especially from Tilda Swinton, who I think gives a great performance. So much is said just in her body language, and the looks on her face, and I think Ezra Miller does a good job too. And Jeremy, you mentioned this, and I totally agree with you. Like, Ezra Miller is a little over the top, and so is John C. Reilly. Like that is
John
the most
C. Reilly
like
does not work
aloof
in this movie
character I've ever. Like, how is he not picking up on this?
No, it's so bad. It just takes you right out of the movie every time John C. Reilly, and I love John C. Reilly, but every time he came in, he was in a different movie.
Yeah,
than
no,
everybody else.
It didn't work, and I totally agree there. And I think if that gets the best of you, then it's definitely a problem for this movie, because it's a catalyst for, asking all the deeper questions about...
It doesn't, though. It doesn't. It's like a nature versus nurture, but there was never really a question about that. It was like, it was almost laughable how she tried to make it that nature versus nurture question of what happens with these horrible kids. And there's these scenes where, for some reason, she never left the town that it happened in.
Yeah, I wondered why she didn't do that either.
Yeah, and then there's these scenes of neighbors just like slapping her in the face staring at her and painting her house red, and the overbearing use of the color red in that movie. Like, yeah.
That's not what I was gonna say. I was basically saying that if you let the John C. Reilly character get the best of you, then you're gonna start to ask those same questions that you were pointing up about Kevin being Damien, and like he's like, you know, pure evil, and why isn't anybody like getting him therapy or doing anything about it?
Who is Damien? When are you saying Damien? Who is that?
From Rosemary's Baby The Omen.
Oh,
okay.
But for me, like, you know, my connection was with Tilda Swinton, and if you follow her, I think...
Well, it is her story. It's from her point of view.
And I think as long as you're with her and with her story, I think that, at least for me, then you can look past kind of the goofiness of John C. Reilly and perhaps...
Do you ever feel like with all these movies, like I said, there's these points where you just can't understand as a human why these characters make these decisions, and part of me with that is Tilda Swinton goes to visit him in prison. Well,
it's her son. I mean,
she also killed her daughter and her husband. And
like, I know, and she never liked him. It's literally, it's all that she has left. I don't know. Look, for me, it's not even so much I think with a problem that you have with Ramsey's movies that I don't is this sort of kind of connection to the character's thought process. Because of the way she shoots her character, like films her characters and like focuses and like holds shots on them and like really relies on performance, you know, I spend a lot of time trying to uncover what they're thinking about, and for me that's, you know, thought-provoking, and I like that about her movies, and it works in all three of them that I've seen, really. Like, I think that's what I liked about all of them, and it's the same thing in all of them. And I think all three of them have their issues, but for me, that was enough. And I really liked You Were Never Really Here, and We Need to Talk About Kevin. Morven Callor, I feel like, is her still trying to... I mean, obviously, it's a really low-budget movie, but...
I like the most.
I still think she's trying to find her... voice, and I think she's on an upward trend, and I think many would argue, given, you know, considering some of the reviews this is getting, that, you know, she's arrived with this movie, but I think her best is probably yet to come.
Well, I hope so. Speaking of those other movies, and out of curiosity, Lee, because you also just recently watched them, but what do you think of her dichotomy of using those sort of vibrant pop songs in all the movies?
They seem a little out of place
against the background of those films.
It worked better in Morven Callor because they felt more diegetic, where they seemed tonally.
Well, they were because she was literally, for most of them, not all of them. But
right.
Yeah, she
was listening to a lot of them, but like they seemed tonally, they were out of place in the other two. Like, that's also something I like, that juxtaposition between, you know, a pop song and a dark theme.
Me too. I usually love that. I usually eat that stuff up, but not for some reason, it doesn't work for me on these because I can't get behind what it's doing. And usually that's my favorite thing in movies.
It's one of the easiest things to mess up too, though. So like, because the song is, you know, when you get those types, like, it's so easy to like that scene because you like the song. Like, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
So it's
Cable, what do you think?
Easy thing to mess up, but.
Because, like, at the end of Chapin is still there?
yeah.
No, like, the end of You Were Never Really Here, that they use this pop song that I think is very similar to one that she's used previously. Did it throw you off on the movie or
what? I don't remember it too well.
It's that silly. It's that silly scene where he has a fantasy that was tonally didn't make any sense.
I don't know why he did. Why she did that at the end?
I actually kind of liked that moment on its own. Like it was. I thought it was. I actually laughed out loud. I was the only one who laughed in the theater. But like,
yeah, if it had stayed and it was.
He blew his head off, and then everybody's walking around like it doesn't. Like it didn't matter. I mean, that's a whole. That's a whole 20 seconds.
Well, that would have been
30 minutes deconstructing. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's a good point about diegetic. For some reason, when you guys said that, my mind went to that scene in Boogie Nights where they the kid is lighting the firecrackers and that tension is building with the what song is that?
It's not the Sister Christian.
Yeah, it is.
It's the Sister Christian song. Yeah.
God, what a great scene!
That's such a great scene, and like
with Alfred Molina.
That's how you do it.
And I got into that song after watching that scene, and
I think we all did. Yeah.
Hey, you want to see something really fascinating?
Because that works with the situation, and you put yourself in there, and it's like you got this song that's totally going against what these characters are feeling, and then you got that sort of dichotomy, and you're wrestling with that. Whereas with her, I feel like she's just like, all right, I'm gonna put this pop song in randomly, and then you feel how you're gonna feel.
Yeah. Well, let's cut her. I like Lynn Ramsey. Let's cut her some slack, though. I mean, she's not Paul Thomas Anderson.
Can I ask you guys one last question before we move on? What did you guys think was the meaning of, or what was the function of the build up to the attacking the governor's mansion and the girl having killed him before Joaquin gets the chance? Like,
no fucking idea.
Oh no! So for me, it's sticking with that mystery of or trying to decide whether or not he's a hero or not. Like, he goes there to be the hero, but never actually has the opportunity to do it. And I think that was the point. I think it was kind of showing you that maybe he's not the hero here. Maybe he's he's as much a villain as anybody else. And I think it's continuing to ask those questions and keeping that mystery alive.
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought, like, maybe is she saying that now this girl is empowered to fight her own battles or something? Because, I mean, the implication that they say, well, she's the governor's favorite. I mean, that whole plot line was so absurd. It was just...
That was bad, yeah. And it was contrived.
It made zero sense. But
it wasn't even that. It was one of those instances where, she's writing the script, or I guess it's based on a book, but either way, like, it's where they got to that point and they said, okay, we need that catalyst to get us to the finale. And they couldn't come up with something well-defined enough. So it's sort of just, it was skin deep, you know what I mean? And that's why that didn't work. Like, it just felt contrived to me.
Okay. But I guess the one thing I'll say about that is they could have, this is what I'm saying. This is why when we're analyzing these movies, I struggle a little bit and I wonder about how truly talented she is. You could have easily had that exact same scenario. The father, I mean, my interpretation of it, and it's not always spelled out, but my understanding of it is that the father sort of gave the governor his daughter for political reasons, as if to like gain a leg up politically. But you could have that same, I mean, there's no reason for him to be the governor. They could be business associates. They could be anything, really. I mean, there's that the fact that he has this high profile person doesn't have any impact on the story whatsoever.
Well, I think it was so that he had the clout to have these hired guns to basically go and off everybody. Like, if it was just the, you know, business partners, how would they have these guys that could go track down?
I guess that's true. I don't generally think that. Do you think governors have access to state police? They could just send them to do their bidding. I don't know, more so than
your average tax attorney, I guess. But
you're
right. It was a thin element of the movie for sure.
Yeah, plot didn't have much.
But
to
I guess,
do
the, with, but the point is you can't deny the plot in this particular case, because the idea. I mean, this the what she implies is that girl has been abused many times before, because how else could she be the governor's favorite, right? But now, after having been rescued once, she's empowered now. She feels like she can kill him. Like, I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's tricky, because I do see what you're saying. You know, it leaves you with a question about the girl. But again, for me, this movie is the story of Joe and his perspective and his story. So I left that scene, you know, asking the question about who he is, and kind of didn't particularly care who the girl was.
Yeah, I specifically, of all my notes and all my questions, just avoided plot on this movie, because I think it makes no sense, and I think she avoided it, really. I think it was just a basis to get to wherever she wanted to go, like something. Yeah. But unfortunately, I think she needed more. I think she needs something there, but it was a mess.
Hey, Albert.
Yes, Alan?
Why are there copies of the style section all over the place? Do you have a dog? A little chow or something?
No, Alan.
Is that a raincoat?
Yes, it is. In 87, Huey released this. Their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics. But they should, because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself. Hey, Paul!
After reviewing Lynn Ramsey, right? Because you don't say E with a S-A-Y.
Yeah, Ramsey.
Yeah, I think Ramsey.
Ramsey, like the Game of Thrones character.
Correct, Ramsey.
Gotcha. So after reviewing Lynn Ramsey's You Were Never Really Here, we're going to go through our top five characters we do not want showing up at our door. And what I like about this top five is it's kind of personal a little bit, and it will delve a little bit into each of our psyches as far as our fears.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to hear what you guys have and how creative you got with it. So let's go. Chapin, let's start with you. Number five.
Okay. Well, so here are my criteria. It had to be specifically people that you did not want to be visited by specifically. It couldn't just be that they were evil. I mean, obviously they're evil, because that's why you don't want them there.
Right.
But this was specifically people who, if they're visiting you, it's not a good thing. Yeah,
they're killing you. It got you. Yep.
And my number five is Tommy DeVito from Goodfellas.
Oh, great
pick.
Yeah,
that's a good pick. I thought
didn't even think of it.
I thought about him. I had Goodfellas on two lists recently, so I wanted to avoid him, but it was actually a hard one to avoid. And the funny thing about that one is Jeremy, I think you and I'm sure you and I had this conversation, that if we had seen Home Alone after Goodfellas, like, that would have been frightening.
We would have missed out on our childhood, but yeah.
Well, no.
That would have been frightening.
But like, you then, Tommy DeVito showing up at Macaulay Culkin's door would have been like, no, I'm not setting traps for him. Take whatever you want.
Yeah, well, apparently he's easily fooled. Just put some matchbox cars
down. You just gotta heat up a doorknob or two, and then...
Heat up a doorknob.
They didn't try that in Goodfellas. They just shot him.
What's that paint can coming at me? Oh, I won't duck.
Oh, brilliant. All right. So a couple criteria for me. I have...
Wait, hold on. Before we go on, there's a Family Guy episode where they make that joke where they come into the house and they go, "Hey, look, there's a bunch of matchbox cars on the ground. Let's just step over those."
God, Family Guy is one of those shows that you wish could be better on a more consistent basis, because they do have such good jokes. So.
They have really good jokes.
But it's not worth watching. All right, so I hope I'm not spoiling anything for you guys, but I'm calling this my Anton Chigurh Memorial List.
Okay.
I also excluded any classic horror characters. Not that I am real familiar with a lot of those movies, but like Freddy Krueger, for example, you know, Mike Myers, I kept those off the list. And then no comic books, and then they also all had to be human beings. So no, you know, monsters or anything like that. So with my number five, I guess keeping with the female theme of the podcast with Lynn Ramsey, I went with a female for two reasons, actually. And it's Eileen Wuornos, played by Charlize Theron in Monster. One being that if I called for a hooker and she showed up, that would be horrible.
Right there. Yeah, that, just you don't have to say
nothing
anymore.
Else. And then on top of it, she'd murder me would be obviously a bad piece too. But I feel like you combine those two things is definitely worthy of it hitting at least number five.
How is that movie?
I don't remember, honestly. Exactly. I liked it at the time, but probably forgettable. She was good in
All right, my criteria were pretty much the same as Lee's. No monsters, no horror characters. Basically all people that their job is to find somebody and kill them. So my number five, that being said, my number five is Benicio Del Toro in Sicario.
That's a good pick. I thought about that too. Yeah. That's a good pick.
I loved him in that movie.
I did too.
I mean, so good.
So like
how cool was he in
the
that
sequel
movie?
To that is like a TV movie, it seems like, right? Like,
well, no, it just seems like a big budget action movie.
Yeah, but it's not going to theaters.
No, it is. It's coming.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's coming to theaters.
It seems like such a, like a, yeah, it seems like a combination of like a big budget Hollywood movie and a TV movie to me.
Nah, I probably might see that one.
I really like Sicario, actually. I thought it was great. But yeah, that's a good pick. I thought about that too, but I didn't remember him well enough to add it.
Okay, well, I'm going to adjust my list a little bit because of the Anton Chigurh. And inspired by you, Lee, I'm going to add Jeanette, the Dutch assassin from Munich. And the reason I'm adding her, she's the one who kills Kieran Hines. Because I would definitely fall for that. Like, she was so sweet, and I would, you know what I mean?
That's such a good pick. I didn't even think about that one.
No, that was a great pick, Jaden.
God, that was good. Damn it.
You should just retire from the pod. Put his name in the rafters.
And that's his number four. All right. Let's see. I got a lot here, but I'm going to go. This one's a little tricky because I'm not Jewish, but my number four is going to be Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds. There's no reason he's showing up at your door unless he's got some sort of beef with you. So, you know, it could be that I'm hiding Jews. You know, we don't know yet, but I'm going with Mr. But yeah, Hans Landa, you know, I think, you know, he, obviously, you guys know my feelings on that movie, but, you know, he's charming and he doesn't seem dangerous, but he is. And we see that, obviously.
Yeah, that's why I kept him off the list, because it'd almost be pleasant.
But that's the.
Do you think that he killed that poor French dairy farmer?
No, but he killed Mel. He killed what's her name?
Bridget von Hammersmark. What I have to remind you of that every time.
No, because I always think of her as Helen of Troy.
Oh God.
Yeah, he kills her, and
but he doesn't go to her house. He goes to the cow, the Frenchman's house.
I know.
Anyways,
I still think he's dangerous. He's my number four.
My number four is Vincent, played by Tom Cruise in Collateral.
That's a great one.
I did not even think about that.
Stone cold killer. He's like a robot killer.
That's the pick of the night.
Try to outrun that guy, forget about it.
It's true.
Nobody runs better in Hollywood than Tom Cruise. That guy can outrun anything. Usain Bolt against Tom Cruise.
If you stop rolling
the film camera, Tom Cruise is still going to
He looks so much cooler him. Running, too. Oh, man, that's not even on my list here. I don't know how I didn't think of him. You guys have got some good picks going. So far, I've got Eileen Wuornos and Hans Landa.
Okay.
Like, now, at this point, I'd welcome them in compared to you guys' lists.
Piggybacking on your pick, Lee, my number three is Eamon Goethe from Schindler's List. And he might not be on your doorstep, but he might shoot you from his.
See, that was my issue with him, is that Hans Landa will kill you if you're not Jewish, whereas Eamon Goethe would only kill you if you're Jewish, I think.
Oh, so I think he would kill anybody.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess if you just annoyed him.
I think it's a great pick.
I think the best scene in that movie is when Schindler has the conversation with him about pardoning people, and that's power, and then he pardons the kid and then he shoots him anyway.
Yeah.
That's honestly, I think that's the best scene in the movie. Like it's so brilliant, and it's so perfectly creates that villain. All right. Chapin.
My number two is Mr.
I haven't got to number three, so.
Wait.
Jeremy's number three.
Oh yeah, right. Sorry. Yeah, number three.
All right, so my number three is...
Are we on three? What was my number three?
Yeah,
I haven't gone yet. So my number three.
Yeah, I just did Amy Youth.
That was your three?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Oh, man, too much cognac. All right. Okay, so I'm going to go with... For my number three, I'm going to go with Leon from The Professional, played by Jean Reno.
Yeah.
See, my problem with that is I liked him.
Maybe he just wanted to come and form a friendship with you or your,
eight-year-old daughter. No, my whole thing, the only reason he would knock on your door is if he was there to kill you. And that, like, there's no other reason for it. Like, that he's such a loner. Like, so if he showed up, if we're following the top five title here, if he showed up at my door, I'd be dead. I know I would be dead.
Mm. Okay.
I guess. But what do you do? The thing is, what do you do wrong?
Yeah, I feel like in The Professional, you would deserve it. Like you,
you would deserve it.
Well, look, like I'd rather not reveal on air what it was that I did wrong
that you've done.
Yeah,
it's the jokes you've made on this podcast.
That's true. Yeah, they probably do deserve it.
All right, so my number three is the T1 Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger. From Terminator 1.
Yeah, I had the T-1000 and the T-1 kind of combined. I thought about that as an honorable mention.
I mean,
but what did you do? You're definitely not part of the resistance.
I don't know. It happened in the future. Yeah. Like,
oh, that's a good point.
Whatever I did, it happened in the future. That's a good point. I don't know. I can't answer your question.
Good point. Good point.
Probably something awesome.
My number two is he's both very frightening and a terrible house guest, Don Logan from Sexy Beast.
Oh, I don't remember that movie.
That's a good one, but is he really a killer?
Yeah, he's a killer for sure.
Yeah, okay. That's a good pick. That's a revisit, but the last time I watched it was actually a lot of fun.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once, like when it first came out.
You should watch it again.
All right. Fuck. I should have done a different one for. Can I change my number three?
No.
Go back?
Because I know what my two and one are, but then I have another one.
Go back, Jack? We have to go back?
Yeah. All right, my number two is Alex, played by Malcolm McDowell in Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want him showing up at my door.
Him and his gang of hooligans, who knows what they'd do to me.
Nothing good.
No, not at all.
Maybe they just take you to the milk bar.
Just don't have a giant statue of a penis. Yeah. Get rid of that. Or I should say get rid of that, Lee.
Only because they might show up, or just anyway.
Probably in general.
I don't know. It's going to look nice in the new room we got being built.
All right. Who's on? It's me, right?
Up. Yep.
My number two is a movie we just talked about a couple podcasts ago. It is The Bride, or Beatrice.
I thought about that. I filled from my Kill Bill with Eileen Wuornos.
Yeah, well...
But what did you do for her to show up? If that's the question we're at, are you part of that gang?
Yeah, just part of the gang.
You were there at the wedding rehearsal.
It was part of the massacre.
I didn't realize. Okay.
Yeah. I was trying to think of a clever code name, but I couldn't come up with it.
Literally,
what snake are you?
That was that dead airspace. Was me trying to think of.
I mean, Tarantino only had so many. He used the same ones in Pulp Fiction, so.
That's true.
Chapin.
Okay, sorry.
One.
My number one is Sir Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, he fell into my classic horror characters, so he had to be excluded for me.
Well, see, I think he'd be there to eat you for sure. Like, if he showed up on your doorstep, he's there for a reason.
I just think if I'm going to get killed, I feel like I'd be okay if I got eaten, too. I mean,
all right, of the three of us, who would honestly taste the best?
I think that'd be me, unfortunately.
I would, yeah.
Jeremy, you're kind of the skinniest, so.
Yeah, don't think there's any way to really enjoy this. Not enough seasoning in the world.
So where does that leave me, the middle child?
I mean,
I'm like the guy that can't afford Kobe beef, you know.
So it's Chapin Kobe beef.
No, oh my god!
Oh my god!
I mean,
now you're getting me hungry. Hey, we should go visit Chapin soon.
Jeremy, you and me need to eat us some Chapin.
Yeah, that'd be good. Human meat.
God, it's not fair. You guys get to drink before these podcasts. Jesus.
Move to the East Coast.
Who's number one? I mean.
All right, my number one. Very similar in many ways to my number two pick from A Clockwork Orange, but it is Paul and Peter from Michael Haneke's original Funny Games.
Of course,
that's a great pick. I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Love that movie. And those guys, I mean,
they literally show up to the doors
for no reason. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's perfect about that. No, that's a great pick. I wish I thought of that. My number one's the obvious one, apparently, Anton Chigurh.
Yeah.
I'm staying. I'm finishing my coffee. Enjoying my coffee.